2 weeks ago, my sister asked me if I could babysit her son, Carson. I wanted to say no, but she and her husband promised to pay me a lot of money for one night. I guess Carson had already scared off all the other potential babysitters. I knew she was desperate, and I really needed the money, so I agreed. Carson is 10, and he's an absolute terror. I'd only babysat him once before, and I swore to myself that I'd never do it again. The whole night, he played these really cruel pranks on me. He hid in the shower to scare me when I went to the bathroom. He stole my phone and deleted all my contacts. He even ruined my new outfit when he splashed me with red paint. When my sister came back home, I told her everything. All she said was that Carson was a good kid. He just hung out with the wrong crowd. I couldn't believe it. She was defending his behavior by saying that his friends were bad influences. I don't even think she punished him. No wonder he thought he could get away with everything. So when I showed up to their house that night, I promised myself that I wouldn't tolerate any more of his pranks. I got there, and right away, Carson acted like a little gentleman in front of his parents. I knew that he was up to something. My sister and her husband left, and I told Carson that he could watch TV while I fixed him a snack. I went into the kitchen to heat up some leftovers, and I started to make myself some tea. Carson was quiet in the other room. I walked back into the living room to check on him, and he just stared at me, smiling. I took a long drink of my tea and instantly spat it out. The tea had this terrible chemical taste. Carson burst out laughing. I was furious. That little psycho had tried to poison me. I screamed at him and told him to go to his room. He tried to argue with me, saying that he'd just added some spices to my tea, and he was laughing the whole time. I physically had to pull him up by the shirt and march him toward his bedroom door. Once he realized that he was in trouble, he stopped laughing. He walked into his room and slammed the door. "You'll be sorry," I heard him whisper. I assumed that Carson figured I wasn't in the mood for any more of his games because he didn't say anything after that. He just stayed in his room. I sat on the sofa and watched some TV for a while. About an hour passed before I saw a movement through the back window. Carson must have snuck out into the backyard. I marched toward the back door and saw Carson walking around the yard. He was wearing a ski mask over his face and had changed into an all-black outfit. Idiot must have thought that if he dressed all in black, I wouldn't be able to see him. I watched through the glass sliding door as he walked along the side of the patio and angrily kicked over each of his family's potted plants. Most of the pots shattered when they hit the ground. "Carson!" I screamed as I opened the door. "Get inside, now!" He turned toward me. I couldn't see his face through the mask, but I could tell from the way he stood that he was angry. Like, he was ready for a fight. He had one hand hidden behind his back, but his other hand flipped me the middle finger. "Inside! Now!" I screamed again. He walked back inside, and I locked the door behind him. I was about to lay into him again when I saw what he'd been hiding behind his back. He had a knife. A big one. He held it out toward me, and I instinctively backed away. "Give that to me," I told him. I tried to be firm, but I think he could tell that he was scaring me. Rather than step closer, he started walking around the room. He slid the tip of the knife against the wall, leaving a long scratch against the wallpaper. Once again, I demanded that he give me the knife, but he just laughed. His laugh sounded different this time, darker. Because Carson was only 10, he was much smaller than me, but that didn't stop me from feeling really scared. I had no idea what he was willing to do. He stepped closer. For a long time, he just stared at me through his mask. Then, like a wild animal, he charged at me. I held up my hands to stop him, but he took the knife and rammed it into my palm. I pulled back, falling backwards against the wall. Searing pain radiated through my whole arm. I knew my nephew was crazy, but I never realized that he was this dangerous. I didn't want to fight him. He was just a little kid. All I could do was scream for him to stop. Then, just as he readied himself to stab me again, I heard the bedroom door behind me start to creak open. I glanced over my shoulder and saw Carson walk out of his room. This mask-wearing kid wasn't Carson at all. It was someone else. And I'd invited him into this house. Moving extremely fast, Carson ran forward to protect me. "Get away from my aunt!" he screamed at the attacker. I held my wounded hand out as more blood pumped out, and I watched as Carson dove at the other kid and knocked the knife out of his hands. Until the kid in the mask turned around and raced out the front door. Now that Carson and I were alone, he ran to me and checked out my hand. "Are you okay?" he asked.
"Who was that?"
He shrugged. "Just one of my friends from school. It was a bad influence." That's all the explanation I got. Carson grabbed my cell and called 911. As he waited for the ambulance to arrive, Carson sat next to me and made sure I was comfortable. He kept apologizing for his friend and promised that he'd protect me, no matter what. Huh. I guess he really was a good kid after all.
The house sat on the edge of the lake that snaked around the mountains. It had a wrap-around porch, so you could sit and watch the sunset over the water. Inside was a large kitchen with two ovens and a breakfast bar. The bay window showcased the beautiful view and let light stream in from all sides. The house was so vast, it seemed almost indulgent. Compared to the quaint home across the street, its neighbor was a cabin-style house. From the outside, it looked like there would have been two bedrooms and a small kitchen. I could practically hear people say, "Oh, what a beautiful couple. Disgusting." I watched the young couple move into my house across the street. The house sat vacant for years, and then, out of nowhere, some rich people bought it as a wedding present for their son. At least, that's what they said around town. They said also that it wasn't going to be a vacation home. The couple was going to be there year-round. Apparently, since everyone is working from home now, rich people are moving into their vacation homes and treating their place in the city like a temporary residence. It doesn't belong to them, I thought. It was mine. That kitchen I cooked in. The shower where I washed my hair. The best times were when the real estate agent would stage it for showings. When that happened, Tim and I slipped over in the bed they brought in to entice people to buy the place. We tried to make it smell weird so no one would. My favorite period was when that couple from Nantucket briefly owned it. It sat fully furnished for months with no one. They even asked me to watch it for them. But these people were going to be here year-round. I had already planned to drive them out. They're rich. So surely some annoying neighbors would drive them to another house they owned. I yelled for Tim. It was time to meet the new neighbors. They were even more attractive up close. I could tell they purchased the most expensive cleansers and lotions. Hell, they probably had a dermatologist and a plastic surgeon they met with regularly. They stood together giggling while the movers worked away, lugging their belongings inside. The man stood tall and strong. He was Indian, and his dark hair was clean-cut and styled with a side part. Sure, he was handsome. She stood just above his shoulders. She had dark blonde hair that looked gold when the sun hit it. Her curls hung halfway down her back. I imagined how easy it would be to snip off her curls. I bet it would be the worst thing that ever happened to her. It would do her some good. Give her some character and humble her. "Hi there." The couple turned to look at Tim. "I'm Tim, and this is my wife, Charlotte. We live right there across the street. Just wanted to come over and meet the new neighbors." "Oh, it's so great to meet you," the man responded. I'm Henry, and this is my wife, Katie. He looked deep into her eyes as he said it. I wish I had something to drop, or better yet, something to spill on them. That's why I started drinking more red wine. I spoke up. Well, aren't you two the cutest? Still in the honeymoon phase, I see. They laughed. Listen, I have an apple pie in the oven for you guys, but we were so excited to have neighbors finally. We couldn't wait for the pie to be done. This place has sat vacant for so long. It'll be nice to have other people nearby. It is pretty secluded, Henry said. I wasn't sure if his wife ever talked or if she let him speak for her. We're hoping to connect with the community, though. In the city, no one knows their neighbors anymore. It's sad. Well, we'll have you over for dinner sometime. I make meat sauce that's to die for. I spoke so sweetly and with the kindest smile. We would love that, Katie finally said. Her voice was like a songbird that you wanted to shoot with a gun so it'd shut up. I told them I would run the pie over once it was out of the oven and cooled. I told them I made it with love. By that, I mean I mixed laxatives into the apple pie filling. My plan was simple. Kill them with kindness. I had to make some adjustments because they were always so lovely every time I knocked on their door. I must have knocked on that door every day for 2 weeks. Sometimes 2 to 3 times a day. And still, they welcomed me inside with a smile each time. They didn't seem to be off-put by it at all. Tim and I also worked together to give them some serious maintenance issues. I would bake something with enough laxatives to make whoever ate it sick the next day. I made it for the only repairman in town, but Henry would fix the issue each time. Apparently, he was an engineer, and his dad made a fortune by building a plumbing business from the ground up. So, Tim and I had to change our plan. Instead of friendly neighbors, we became noisy and overstepped. I started working in her garden. Tim mowed their lawn. I began asking questions about their sex life. Katie was worried that we would hear them. After that, anytime I saw her, I would make an inappropriate joke about it. We spread rumors about them around the town to make them outcasts, but everyone already loved them. They had different people over for dinner every weekend. They raved about Katie's cooking, and Henry could tell a story or two, they would say. Nothing worked. After much thought and discussion, Tim and I decided we would only get our house back if we killed them. We planned to sneak in after the sun went down and would frame it as a murder-suicide. We would slit one throat and 2 wrists. The cop wouldn't wonder why we didn't call sooner, because we didn't hear a gunshot or anything. I volunteered to slit Katie's throat. I made them a cake with enough Ambien to knock out a horse. We watched them eat it through their windows. They loved it. Tim thought we should sharpen our knives, but I told him that we must use theirs. We wore all black with gloves and other safety measures and snuck over. Tim made a copy of their key when he was visiting with Henry. He ordered a key copier on Amazon, like a little spy gadget. It is incredible what you can get your hands on these days. I hope my house wouldn't be a crime scene for too long, and the family would take a while to move out the furniture. They had a California king bed, and Tim gets so hot when he sleeps. With Katie's favorite kitchen knife, I drew a clean line on her neck. I considered doing some work on her face, but I had to hold myself back. I didn't want anything to raise questions. She didn't wake up or anything. It was so easy. I handed the knife to Tim, who did the same thing, but with Henry's wrists. He, unfortunately, did wake up. The good news is he ate so much cake, even with all the adrenaline, he couldn't do anything other than look at us confused, crying and groggy. He tried to make it to his phone that was charging on the dresser, but couldn't. All this was just too much for me, so I left Tim to move the body to the bathtub. It took Tim forever before he came down the stairs. We can watch the sunrise. It looks like it's just starting to come up, Tim said. So we did. On our porch, after months, we could watch the sunrise again. The next morning, the cops came and took our statements. We didn't hear from them again, and I just hoped the family didn't move out the furniture for months.
I babysat every Wednesday and Friday for a family that lived a couple of blocks away. Since I was in college, it was a decent way for me to get some extra cash between studying. And I could even take my laptop and get assignments finished while watching the kids. There were two of them, a 10-year-old boy and his younger 7-year-old sister. They were both nice enough for the most part, but the little girl had an odd streak. Sometimes she would say or do things that freaked me out, but I always chalked it down to her being young with an overactive imagination. This particular evening, the parents were going to be home relatively late, and I had to look after the kids for 6 hours, from 6 o'clock to midnight. Everything went smoothly, at first. We ate dinner together at the kitchen table, and then I set them down in front of the television for a bit while I cleaned up. When I went back into the living room, Amy was nowhere to be seen. "Jake, where's your sister?" I asked. I hadn't seen her go upstairs. She would have had to slip past the kitchen to reach the staircase, and I'd been facing it most of the time. Jake just shrugged. I sighed, looking around the room. There was only one doorway, which led directly into the kitchen, and I knew she hadn't left. "Amy, where'd you go?" When I got no response, I threw up my hands exasperatedly. Was she hiding from me? She could be a little bit of a trickster when she wanted to be. "All right, Amy, I guess you won't be getting milk and biscuits before bed," I said loudly, keeping an eye out for any movement. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the curtains shuffle briefly around the window. I narrowed my eyes. There was a small shape crouched behind the heavy fabric, the pale glimmer of feet sticking out from beneath it. I rolled my eyes. "I wonder where Amy could be," I wandered aloud, walking over the curtain on silent feet. Grasping a handful of material, I flung the curtain open. Amy lunged at me, a manic grin on her face as something silver and sharp glinted in her hand. I stumbled back, my eyes going wide as the girl threw back her head and started to laugh. I grabbed it out of her hand before she could hurt herself, or me. "Amy, what on earth are you doing with a knife?" I said incredulously, holding it out of her reach. "You know it's dangerous to play with sharp objects. This is not funny." Amy continued to laugh, her cheeks going pink.
But Adam told me to do it," she said, the laughter fading.
I felt a soft clench in my chest and tried to keep my exasperation down. "Amy, Adam isn't real." Adam had been her imaginary friend since I had started babysitting them, and he was often the one to blame for Amy's tricks.
"Yes, he is!"
she exclaimed, her voice turning serious, all traces of amusement slipping away.
"He's standing right behind you. He's trying to get the knife out of your hand."
I instinctively glanced back over my shoulder, moving the knife. Of course there was nobody there. Adam was just a made-up fantasy. He would disappear as soon as Amy got old enough. "All right, but Amy, listen to me," I said, crouching down to face her. "Do not play with knives. Someone could seriously get hurt." Amy's smile widened.
"I know,"
was all she said, before skipping over to the sofa and sitting beside her brother, who was so busy watching television that he was oblivious to it all. Later that evening, I made myself a cup of tea to try and stay awake. It was just after 9 o'clock, and it was time to put Amy and Jake to bed. I wasn't expecting it to be easy. They normally protested when I tried to get them to go upstairs, but I had managed to bribe them with milk and biscuits before bed, which sometimes did the trick. I took a sip of tea, calming my nerves, and headed upstairs to make sure the kids had finished brushing their teeth. "I want you both in bed by the time I get upstairs," I shouted as I started walking, gripping the banister with my left hand. The landing upstairs was quiet.
I couldn't hear anyone still in the bathroom. Maybe they both had finally done what I'd said and gone to bed. I checked on Jake first. He was already tucked up in bed, so I said goodnight and switched off his light before checking in on Amy. Her bed was empty. She wasn't in her room either, which made me utter out another exasperated groan. She was such hard work. Amy, come on, it's bedtime, I called out, sticking my head out the door. The landing was quiet. Was she hiding again? As long as she didn't have a knife this time. Amy, your parents will be home soon. You don't want them to find you out of bed, do you? Still nothing. Rolling my eyes, I went looking for her, but she wasn't in any of the rooms upstairs. Had she gone back down to the living room? With a sigh, I headed back downstairs. As soon as I walked into the kitchen, I let out a short, sharp breath. What are you doing? I blurted, my eyes going wide. Amy was standing on one of the kitchen stools, pouring something into my cup of tea. It didn't take me long to realize what was inside the small blue bottle. Bleach. Amy Williams, get down from there right this second, I shouted, struggling to stay calm. Why was a 7-year-old pouring bleach into my drink? I didn't understand it. I'd never known a child like her. She had such a twisted idea of amusement that sometimes I was scared to come here. She set the bottle of bleach down and stepped off the stool, feigning innocence.
Don't shout at me. I don't like it when you shout, she whined, her lips trembling.
I pinched my nose, breathing heavily to calm down. All right. I'm sorry for shouting, I said. But what you're doing is serious. I think we need to talk to your parents about it.
No! She screamed, her composure shattering. Don't tell them, please!
I shook my head. I have to, Amy. These pranks you've been pulling are dangerous. Someone's going to get hurt if...
But it's Adam! Adam's the one who tells me to do it, she said, her voice blubbering. He said if I don't do it, then he'll hurt me.
Her words struck a pang of fear in my chest.
But Amy, Adam isn't real. He's just an imaginary friend that you made up. He can't hurt you.
Amy started crying then, and I sighed. Kids really were exhausting.
He is real, she sobbed. He is. He's standing right next to you.
Okay, shh, I said, softly shushing her. Why don't you tell me what he looks like then? Amy sniffed, patting her eyes dry with the sleeves of her pajamas.
He's a kid, like me. He's really pale and has no eyes.
Dread punched me in the stomach. He has no eyes? Amy shook her head.
No, there's just two dark holes where his eyes are supposed to be, she said quietly. He tells me to do things like put pins in my parents' bed and pour bleach in your tea so that you drink it.
I swallowed thickly, trying to wrap my head around what she was telling me. Just who was this Adam? Surely a 7-year-old couldn't make all of this up. How did you manage to get past the child lock on the bleach? I asked, already knowing the answer.
Adam showed me.
The ground suddenly felt wobbly beneath me. I was only a college student. I wasn't equipped to deal with a child's creepy, violent, imaginary friend. All right, I think we need to have a sit-down with your parents, I said, but Amy started crying again.
No, please don't tell them. If you tell them about Adam, then he'll hurt me, please.
I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to believe her, but I found it hard to believe that she was making everything up. Surely there was a limit on even a child's imagination, and the horrors they could conjure. All right, I said, I won't tell them. But do you promise to go to bed like a good girl? She nodded vigorously and ran upstairs. As soon as she had gone, I called her parents to come home early, making sure to tip the bleach-tainted tea down the drain before anyone could accidentally drink it. Later that night, as I was leaving, I saw Amy standing at the windows upstairs, waving at me. As I waved back, for just a moment, I thought I glimpsed a shadow standing behind her. A shadow that belonged to neither her or her brother. But maybe it was just a trick of the light. After that night, I'd never babysat there again.